This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Good afternoon, this is 5 Live and the Good Doctor makes a welcome return.
Thank you very much for that. Can I just say, I'm really thrilled to say, you know, one of the things people say about critics, they say, you know, you've got no idea what it's like to get a bad review. There's a wonderful thing in some paper this morning. There's a review of...
Is it not The Guardian or Time?
No, it's not.
You're only reading.
It comes off the intranet. But I am described, and I'm so proud of this, I am described as a man who gives all bitter middle-aged film critics a bad name.
That's quite good.
I think that's great.
See, the thing is with Sophie Okonedo is... I've been ill this week. I couldn't see.
I know. How are you?
I'm still ill. However, I just thought far better. She's a very respected.
Oh, she's great.
Very respected actress. Tell her that you haven't seen the film.
But Simon, that's the difference between you and everybody else. Is that you're decent, honest, and truthful, and everybody else is rubbish.
I think she thought it was an excuse. But you know, having just said you've watched the trailer, anyway. No. Roger Ebert's review. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I know, I read
if
Roger...
If I sense the beginning of a tear in my eye during a movie, that is evidence more tangible than all the mighty way to film through. The only trouble with that is, as far as you're concerned, you cry in everything.
Roger Ebert is a very, very good film critic. I may be mistaken. I think he was recently involved in some sort of spat about walking out of movies. I may be misremembering this, but I think there was something just quite... But it's funny, when you look at his collected works, the thing about him is he really understands how cinema works with an audience. You know, he's not one of those people. He's not a bitter, middle-aged film critic giving us all a bad name.
If you are going to email and text the programme, as indeed hundreds of you are already, if you could restrict it to like a couple of paragraphs, because I won't be able to get through more than about two paragraphs without choking. So we'll try this from Steve in Aylesbury. Dear Muttley and Dastardly...
As long as I'm Muttley.
I have a new competition, to which I declare myself the first winner.
Yep.
It's this. Who has tuned in to your broadcast in the most relaxed position?
This is going to end badly.
I never work on Fridays. I make a point of pumping up the old boiler, setting the wireless for the appropriate wavelength, then stepping into a red-hot rim lapper of a bath at 2:50 with a glass of decent wine. I then enjoy your wittertainment to the full... unadulterated, uninterrupted pleasure that you provide, then fully satiated...
Sated?
Sated.
Surely.
I quit my bath for a more dry experience, normally involving towels. If anyone can supplant that as the most relaxed listener, I would happily doff my hat, except I'm not wearing one as I'm in the bath. Pass the sponge. I think that might be the beginning and the end of the competition. So if anyone is... When I say competition... It is, of course, not a competition
because you can't win anything.
There are no prizes, and we're not allowed to do that kind of thing.
But we never did anyway, even when we were allowed
to. If you are more relaxed
than
that, then you can get in touch. Now, this is interesting. Philip, he just says Philip in Ireland, which is very unspecific, very vague. On last week's programme, Mark, you said that if you were stuck on a desert island with a stereo and a stack of U2 CDs, you would prefer to sit in silence.
Yeah.
Well, if that ever happens, you shouldn't let those CDs go to waste. Carefully arrange them into the letters H, E, L and P and face the formation shiny side outwards towards the horizon. The sun will glint off the CDs and alert passing craft to your predicament. The inlay cards could be put to good use also. Tear them up and arrange them into a pile on the sand. Now rub two dry twigs together, which you found miraculously, to create a spark. When flames take hold of paper, slowly add in the jewel cases to create an unmistakable black plume. Incidentally, if the stereo receives AM, there's no need to sit in silence. Simon and your stand-in will be discussing the latest releases and saying hello to people on a Friday.
Yeah, you see, the problem with the writing help in CDs, right, is that you get the entire U2 back catalogue and write the letters help in it, and a plane would come down, they'd be down a bit, they'd go, hang about a minute, that's the entire U2 back catalogue. He's obviously got lousy taste, let's leave him alone.
P.S. I love Julianne Moore and Broccoli too. They're gorgeous and healthy source of calcium, respectively. Dear Doctor in the TARDIS, says Aaron Pawson, BSc Honours, MRSC, PhD, brackets, Evil Studies in Shropshire. I can't be Evil Studies.
Dr. Evil. That's a gag. PhD is DC.
Dr. Evil. Absolutely right. Whilst browsing in my local branch of a well-known high street retailer the other day, I came across a copy of Roger Goldby's film, The Waiting Room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was the cover, and in particular, the quote, writ large, just under the film title that caught my eye.
I know what this is.
In large letters, it proclaimed...
better than Sex and the City.
Mark Kermode, the culture show, the BBC. We all know the Good Doctor's views on that particular chick flick, so obtaining this particular quote would be rather less of a marketing coup than the editor was hoping for, which led me to wonder if perhaps the editor thought the Good Doctor was referring not to the film but to two entirely separate things. Again, hardly a great marketing coup, given that the low regard in which the financial institutions are held at the moment. Or perhaps they just missed a fantastic marketing opportunity and the quote should have been edited down to just the first three words.
Oh, I see. Fine. Can I just let me explain the background because it is interesting. What happened was I reviewed those two movies together because they came out the same week. And it was Sex and the City and The Waiting Room. And I did say the phrase better than Sex and the City. I think when because I like The Waiting Room. I think it's kind of good and it's got a great good performance by Anne-Marie Duff in it. And you know it was a kind of small little movie, but I liked it. And I think I said, you know, better than Sex and the City. Then again, slamming your finger in the car door is better than Sex and the City. And then, of course, when the DVD was coming out, they were very polite. They got in touch and said, do you mind if we quote you as having said it? I said, well, as long as I actually said it, of course you can quote me. That's absolutely fine. And then later on, I wrote a thing in the Observer having to say, you know, when I said better than Sex and the City, it's way better than that. Because if you know what I thought of Sex and the City, it is like saying, but that's only marginally better than slamming your finger in the car door. So to paraphrase, gosh, that was long and rambling. I like Waiting Room.
Unusually.
I hate Sex and the City, but they, you know, they asked nicely, so...
Now, here comes the box office top 10, which features at number 10, Dostana.
Which
it hasn't been shown to national
But I would really like, if anyone has seen it, to give us a review, because it sounds like an interesting film. It's an Indian movie, and it's a comedy, and just the subject matter sounds very interesting. User comments, happy and gay, exclamation mark. So please, somebody send me a review, because I'm quite intrigued.
Would that be gay in the traditional sense?
I don't know. It just says happy and gay. So that's it. I mean, I like you, Simon, I wouldn't presume to make any assumptions about a movie that I haven't seen. I've only watched the trailer of. Oh, sorry.
But the thing is, but you see, you might say that, but actually, you do, doesn't it? You just, you know, you see a trailer and you're on, think, well, no, I don't think I'll see
in
that.
In a world of men, yes. He was a dog. Yeah. No, I know, I agree.
You do. So you do make judgments based on seeing the trailer.
Yeah, you do.
Thus undermining everything that you
just said. The difference is, Simon, that I wouldn't say that out loud.
At nine.
Say it out loud because I saw the poster. I saw the poster in Price.
I'm sure I heard you just say Igor's at nine.
You say Igor, I say Igor, and where's Tim Burton?
Quarantine or Quarantine is at eight.
You know, Wreck, the original Spanish movie that this is based on, is available on DVD with a load of interesting extras with, you know, great soundtrack, sound design by Oriol Tarago, and, you know, really... I don't see the excuse for seeing the same film in American. Read subtitles. Read subtitles. Incidentally, I got an email during the week from Jason Isaacs. Hello to Jason Isaacs, who said you have to strike Simon about the head on the subtitles issue. And he also said,
"Why? What have I said about
subtitles?" Because he thinks that you're not down with subtitles. That you complain about things being foreign movies.
Name me one occasion.
I'm not
where
getting into this.
You know,
he accuses me of mispronouncing names, but
Isaacs, you're an idiot. We're not going to say that.
The other thing he said in the email was something like, he said, "I'm listening to the podcast from a sewer in somewhere."
And
he
said, "You're right."
And he said, "Have the Johnnies Come Lately, like Fairport, shown this kind of dedication?"
No,
and there was just a whiff of
insecurity. That's what I like.
No, Jason Isaacs is a lot of things, but insecure isn't one of them.
I have never, as far as I'm aware, I've never slacked off a film
to get lost
ever, because I haven't got a problem with subtitles.
No, you do. You go
the worst thing.
You go, is it a foreign film? In the same way that Ken Russell's mother used to say, is it a British picture?
No.
Meaning, is it rubbish and does it have people drinking cups of tea?
This is only going to be based on the fact that maybe at 1 minute to four, you finally say, oh, and
Silence
by the way,
of Lorna.
The movie of the week is something
Silence
in
Silence of Lorna,
Swedish,
I'll do it which, right now. I'll tell you right now, that's how
no
it's going to
happen.
No
one's ever heard of
it. It's in Belgium. It's Belgian.
There you go.
There you go.
Enough. Okay. So, Isaacs, just get your facts right, mate, before you start slagging me off in emails, because my lawyers will be in touch.
You did that in a Jason Statham voice.
Jason.
Because my lawyers will be in touch and they'll be heavily oiled from the waist up.
Chris in Exeter, BA Ancient History, pending, still in my second year. Just on the sort of quarantine, so I didn't go and see that. Went to see Wreck, which was on the Cinema Society on campus.
And?
Sat alone in the middle of the front row, and it's fair to say, I was rather scared.
Good.
Still enjoyed it. Never been a big horror fan. But after this, I'm going to get the Exorcist DVD. Give that a go. Could Mark tell me which version I should go for?
Well,
wish I hadn't started.
No, Shall I just avoid it? I mean, I think you should see the version you've never seen, which is what it's called, ironically, because once you've seen it, then it isn't. But, of course, the 25th anniversary American edition does still have The Fear of God in its nearest to complete version on it.
Ghost Towns at 7.
Which I like very much, and it's good to see that Ricky Gervais didn't go to America and make rubbish movies like so many British comedians.
Max Payne at 6.
You know, it's... When he came on, when the director came on to talk about it, and I thought he talked a much more interesting movie than he actually made. And the problem with it is that there's lots of interesting ideas, but none of them are actually on screen. In the end, it's just a bunch of stuff and digital stuff. And even Marky Mark Wahlberg, who talks about the character being the most intense character he's ever intensely played, it's so intense, and the intensity of it was extremely intense. I didn't think it was.
Zach and Mary Make a Porno at 5. High School Musical 3, Senior Year at 4.
It's all singing, it's all dancing, and it's fab.
Now, if you're watching this online, because this is being live streamed because the lights are on, Mark just did an extraordinary kind of John Barrowman-esque camp musical thing. So we're just going to do that again, just in case people were just sort of tuning in now. They might want to see that again. High School Musical 3, Senior Year at 4.
It's all singing, it's all dancing, and it's fab.
Very convincing. Scarily so. My Best Friend's Girl is at 3.
Which they didn't do a national press show of. And frankly, I cannot be bothered to go and see films which don't get national press shows.
The idea of paying. Body of Lies is at number 2.
Yeah,
now,
well,
Chrissy Nexter, the aforementioned. I was wary about seeing Body of Lies.
Best Friend's Girl, incidentally, rather than Wedding.
Best Friend's Girl at number 3.
Yeah, your mouth said Wedding.
Body of...
Your brain said girl in the same way that your brain said the thing about watching trailers and then your mouth said it out loud.
Chris says, I was worried about seeing Body of Lies last week after seeing the trailer. There you go.
Yep.
As it made it look like Ridley Scott had become one of those infected with the Bayification virus. However, the film was a good, solid thriller, well made, well acted, especially Mark Strong. And was it just me? Or was DiCaprio playing the same role as he did in The Departed? And I felt reassured that Ridley Scott, while this isn't his best film, is still... one of the greatest filmmakers around.
I felt that it was a fairly moderate effort from Sir Scott. And I think that there was a, you know, he used to make one movie every 3 or 4 years. Now he's making one a year. And I just think that the output rate is too high. The problem with Body of Lies is it's kind of convoluted and confused. And yet what it's saying is fairly simple. I think it feels much more important than it actually is. I think Mark Strong is terrific, incidentally. I think we should start saying hello to Mark Strong because he's great. And
we don't have any evidence that he ever listened, so there'd be utterly no point. I mean, I'm very happy
Mark,
to do that.
Mark, if you're out there, we think you're great.
Yes.
But
and
if you can prove
you're listening, we'll say hello to you.
The movie itself, I think, was a disappointment.
Dear Lala and Poe, says George Tew, the life of man in his natural state, wrote Hobbes, is nasty, brutish and short. The same description could be applied to Quantum of Solace, not really a film at all, but a succession of glossy advertisements. Body of Lies, on the other hand, is a superior spy thriller, which I felt The Good Doctor didn't give the credit it was due. Strong central performances, a rather sweet and culturally sensitive love story, compare and contrast with the knucklehead Bond, whose seduction technique lacks the sophistication of the Milk Tray Man. Some good action sequences where the camera stays still for long enough for you to see what is going on, and an actually surprisingly nuanced and interesting take on the war on terror. The plot, while a bit silly in parts, generally made sense. The Good Doctor felt it was incoherent, but I think he needs to concentrate harder. Workman like Scott rather than inspired Scott, I agree, but better than Bond in every respect.
Well, look, you know, very well argued, incidentally. Yes, obviously better than Bond in every respect. I think the relationship between DiCaprio and the nurse is completely, you know, cronky plot. It's like, we need to demonstrate that he's, you know, he understands stuff on the ground. And that I could really have lived without. And I thought that relationship stuff was nonsense, actually. I think that Ridley Scott is such a great director that he can make anything look good because, blimey, he knows how to light a shot. I mean, it's not for nothing that he was essentially his own DP for years and years. I just think that there are script issues with that film that aren't resolved. I mean, clearly it's aiming high. It wants to be taken seriously. I just think it thinks it's a lot more profound than it is. And in the end, what it's saying is fairly simple, is the only people that understand are the guys on the ground. You know, that took me 10 seconds.
Steve set off a new competition.
Okay.
About the most relaxed listener.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the bath with a glass of wine.
You said that exactly like he's in the bath
with a glass of wine. Exactly like what?
You know, me, the third Earl of...
Oh, I see. Paul Whitehouse style. Madhu, brackets, BA Chemistry and Biochemistry, University of Pennsylvania, PhD Biology, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And Lauren, BA History and French, Boston College.
Excellent.
Consider your credentials established. Says, Dear Ham and Cheese, we have to nominate our cat, Max, as your most comfortable listener. He's currently listening whilst sitting between us on the couch, purring and getting scratched behind his ears.
Oh.
Well, if anyone else was in that position, I suspect that they'd be the most comfortable listener. But it could be Max or it's Steve.
I'm not sure that cats actually do listen to radio, though, do they? Oh, no, actually, that's not true. My cat, I used to have a cat called, long deceased now, but a cat called Spaldrick. He was a lovely cat who apparently, when I was on the radio, would look worried.
Yeah. How do you know he was worried? How do you know it was not just utter bafflement?
No, it was probably utter bafflement, but, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sam. You're being really tough on me today.
So the number one movie is, of course, still Question of Sport. And Andrew Denny, brackets, Canal Boat, Granny Buttons, presumably that's where he is. Dear M&Q, saw Question of Sport last night, couldn't understand why you were complaining. The film made sense to me. Quantum is a secret organisation.
Yeah, I know Quantum's a secret organisation. There's that ridiculous bit where they say, you know...
an email. Where Spectre chased its riches in gold and diamonds, Quantum pursues oil and water. M didn't know about it, so why should you or I know any better? I thought it was all perfectly obvious. The plot is an accurate metaphor of life, i.e. no one knows what the Jonathan Ross is going on. One quibble, though, which I quite like.
That's actually a good phrase.
Yes. What the Jonathan Ross is going on. One quibble, though. How come MI5 didn't know about Quantum when the villain walks around wearing a Q lapel badge? Surely someone would ask, what's that badge for? To which he was said, oh, do you know what? I'm going to take over the world. Well spotted. Phil, on the subject of Dostana, he says, Dear B&Q, Dostana was featured on Up All Night a few days ago. Two male friends pretend to be gay in order to get a flat. All hell breaks loose when a gorgeous female flatmate appears on the scene and they start fighting over her with hilarious consequences.
Is that a review, hilarious consequences, or is that a...
It's a review of what someone said on Up All Night.
But it's like one of those things. If you say, you know, that sounds to me like the description by the people who made the film itself. You know, it's like four Christmases. They have to go through four Christmases with hilarious consequences. I'm interested whether anyone said whether it actually is hilarious.
There's a new review in just a moment, but before we progress, some correspondence of the subject of Time and the City.
Oh, yeah.
Ollie Clifford says, Dear AC and DC...
Don't even touch it.
Went to see Of Time and the City on hearing the Good Doctor's review of said film and then the subsequent debates. Don't get me wrong, I do prefer independent films to blockbusters. I can't see how Sir Kermay can praise this complete snooze fest of a film. My wife stayed awake for about 10 minutes and I could only think of one reason why the Good Doctor would praise the film so highly. Being such a horror aficionado, I'm sure Mark noticed the somewhat uncanny resemblance to the narrator's voice that of Jigsaw, a.k.a. Tobin Bell, in the Saw franchise of films. In fact, the film would have been more interesting if Jigsaw had turned up and forced the narrator of the film to actually say something interesting on threat of being crushed to death by the liver birds. Mike, this is Mike D, MA Digital Games Design.
This had better be an alternative point of view.
Dear Vista and Linux, following the Doctor's advice regarding A Time in the City, I went to see it, was left feeling cold and confused. I understand old Terry's feeling nostalgic for something about Liverpool. I couldn't understand exactly what. Is he really nostalgic for workhouse slums with stray dogs, broken windows and graffiti? What's wrong with gentrification, Terry? Also, about talking in the cinema, which is where we were.
Yes.
How about singing? I recently watched Ghost Town, where the man sat behind me sang along with the music, not just during the opening credits, but continued to sing even when the film had started proper. Craig in Glasgow.
That is new.
Of Time in the City. Sorry, didn't like it at all. I think if you were from Liverpool, you might. But sitting in Glasgow, I just thought, why? However, I would concede that he does have a good voice. Secondly, I learnt a new word last Christmas, and Mark might find it useful. The word is emetic, meaning vomit-inducing.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark said vomit-inducing the other week, and I instantly thought of my new word. So there you go.
All right, can I just say on the subject of Time in the City, you know, obviously you're all wrong. Terence Davis isn't nostalgic for workhouses and all the rest of it. He's nostalgic for his own childhood. It's kind of coincidental that his childhood happens to have played out in Liverpool. I think that the key thing, and I refer you again to the comment that John Harris made when we saw it in Cannes, he said, you know, where's the stuff about the toxic rights? Where's the stuff about, you know, these classic Liverpool events that people think of as the forming. And I say, it's not about Liverpool. It's about Terence Davis's childhood, which happens to have been there. And in the end, it's a poem. I mean, what can I tell you? I just love it. I've seen it three times now.
Oh, my word.
And but it's so short. You know, I mean, it's like 65, 70 minutes. The time just flies by. And I can defend it in no greater way than saying every time I've seen it, it has just worked. It's strange magic with me. And it's shaping up as my favourite film of the year. I've got to tell you, it's just wonderful.
We should also remember to say hello to all members of the Electric Light Orchestra.
Are we doing all of... Eh? When did
this,
that happen?
This was when you were off and Andrew Collins was in.
Thanks for bringing that up. That's like when you go somewhere with a partner, right? And you go, we went here together. Oh, no, sorry. That was another girlfriend.
Well, don't go
Thanks for that.
Don't go away then. It's very easily sorted. What can you do in 5 minutes, Mark?
Well, should we do Changeling?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So Changeling is the new Clint Eastwood movie.
It's an Angelina Jolie thing.
It's a Clint Eastwood movie. It's the story. It's an extraordinary story. From the 1920s, a mother whose son is abducted. The police force are under terrible pressure to get results because they're falling apart. And they say, we found your son. And they turn up with this kid. And she says, that's not my son. And they say, yes, it is.
How's it feel to have your son home, Mrs. Collins?
What did you think when you saw him for the first time?
It's hard to explain.
She was shocked at first. She didn't recognize the boy, which is perfectly natural. He's been through quite an ordeal.
How are you feeling, son? But it feels great to be home.
Yeah, that's great.
Los Angeles Police Department is thankful for all the hard work done by the DeKalb County Sheriff's Department in making this joyful reunion possible. The LAPD is dedicated to serving the public at all times.
Can we get a photo with mother and son, Captain?
Absolutely. There we are.
Now, I think the crucial thing to say this, when I first saw this, I saw it in Cannes. At the beginning of the film, it didn't say anything, didn't say based on a true story or a true story. The film just started. And I wasn't familiar with this story. I mean, other people maybe, but I wasn't. And watching the movie, I thought it was just, you know, it's classic Clint Eastwood. He's a very unfussy director. He does things in a really efficient nuts and bolts way. I mean, the joy of his filmmaking is that he learnt his trade working in exploitation films, you know, in which he had to get three scenes shot a day. And there is just there's no slack. There's no loose fat, and it just the thing moves on. But I thought, you know, blimey, it's like three. It starts out as this kind of film, and then it turns into that kind of film. And then one person said that it starts out being a kind of L.A. Confidential film, and then it becomes Silence of the Lambs. It's an extraordinary and frankly harrowing story. And I thought the problem that I have with this is, efficient and terrifically made as it is, the story is just, you know, it's unbelievable. Of course, it turns out the story is almost entirely true. There are certain dramatic licenses taken, although the actual story, if anything, is even weirder and even stranger and even creepier.
The version I saw did have...
Let's say yes, and now since Cannes, it now does. And I think it was one of the
based
things...
Based on a true story.
Based on a true story. And of course, I interviewed Angelina Jolie and she said...
We've all done that.
I know, thank you. I was throwing it away, but thanks for bringing it up. She said that what he wanted to say at the beginning was a true story. That's it. You know, not based on, just a true story. I think it's important to know going in that it's true, because what happens in the film is so extraordinary, is so frankly unbelievable, that only by knowing that it's grounded very firmly in reality and that the story has been very well researched, there is a certain, as I said, amount of dramatic invention, but I think within the circumstances of the true story, it's all forgivable entirely. So, knowing that it's a true story, here's the things that you need to know about it. Jolie's performance, I think it's terrific. I think she's really good. I still think Mighty Heart is the best work she's ever done, and she's clearly a very accomplished actress. She happens to have this other, you know, area of her career in which she does Wanted, the team of Bekmambetov movies, and, you know, Tomb Raider and all that nonsense and fluff, which I could literally live without. And I just
the womb of death.
That's right.
Beware the womb of death.
I mean, I can do that. It really is, isn't it? It really is.
Now. The womb. Can't do it normally.
No.
This week, I'm there. Beware. The force is strong with this one.
Have you turned
it? CNN. I'm James Earl Jones.
James
Earl
Jones, fine, I can't believe. Anyway,
so where were we?
So she's really, really good. Actually, all the supporting cast, you know, are very solid as well. The design is terrific. I mean, you really do think that the period is wonderfully evoked, to the point that you stop looking at the scenery. You stop thinking, oh, because actually, when people talk about films being beautifully art directed, it tends to be, if the art direction is in your face, you sort of notice it. But if it isn't, if it works, you kind of don't notice it. It's always very difficult. But in the case of Changeling, I didn't end up looking at the setting, which I think is an indication that it was doing the job really well. The real hero of the story is Clint Eastwood. There are very few directors who could put a film together in that way. I keep using this word unfussy, but that's what he is. He literally, it's like he's got to focus on the story, he's got to focus on the narrative, he's got to focus on what needs to be done between this scene and this scene, and he just does it. And there's something in the way in which he directs that makes you look at everything that's happening at the moment with the Bayification of modern cinema, and you're just realizing how vacuous it all is, realizing how completely empty-headed and spectacular cinema has become. Now, look, I like trash as much as the next man. But when you look at something like Changeling, you just think what's really great about it isn't that it's portentous and that it feels like it's incredibly important, as I think in the case of Body of Lies, but that it's so understated about what's unbelievably, you know, torturous proceedings. Now, it is a tough film. It's only a 15 specific, but it is tough. And it's fairly lengthy. It takes its time telling its story, although it really, really needs to. I think it's extremely likely that Jolie will be nominated. I think she may even have a chance of winning the Oscar, or you know, maybe a BAFTA or something. But I think the reason to go and see it in the end is because it's a great Clint Eastwood movie, and it reminds you that when he did things like Unforgiven, he'd learnt his trade on the ground. And once again, it's demonstration: people who learn their trade in exploitation cinema understand how to do this stuff properly.
One other thing to say. John Malkovich is great.
Yeah, no, he is. And he's not doing a mad John Malkovich performance, which he has fallen into quite a lot.
I mean, he plays a preacher who's got a radio show and he kind of speaks out against police corruption. But yeah, it's a really interesting performance.
It is. It is good because it's very well nuanced, because when you first meet his character, he seems incredibly creepy and incredibly strange and incredibly threatening. But actually, you know, that does, you know, change during the course of the film. And of course, I would say this. I think Jolie's performance is really good because she's not just bouncing off the walls, which actually the story would allow you to do. You know, an awful lot of it is very, very internalised. But I think that comes down again to the fact, you know, film is a director's medium. Say what you like about it. Film is a director's medium. Directors get performances out of actors. And every good screen actor understands that it's down to who's behind the camera.
But it is worth underlining, you have said, it's worth underlining with red pen and then circling it with Tippex. It's a tough watch.
Oh, it is.
Particularly the first hour and a half, you're thinking, blimey, come on.
Well, you say particularly the first hour and a half. I thought the last hour of it, in which it goes off into territory, which is closer.
Okay, the first 2.5 hours.
The whole film.
No, it's all from start to finish.
It's tough. It's a tough. It's a yeah. It is.
There's
a
lot of Shawshank before the Redemption. That's what we have to say.
That, you see, the thing is, I've started using that phrase now. I know it's your phrase, but I'm fed up of telling everybody to use it. Okay.
I'm not possessive about it.
Yeah, it's a good film.
Paul in Norwich, dear Marks and Engels, I'm listening online. I've got no idea how to watch your live streaming video thing. Where is it?
I don't know.
No, well, you don't know.
It's on the intraweb, isn't it?
bbc.co.uk/5live, and you click on the picture of me and Mark. I think it might just be Mark. Probably Mark with Brad Pitt hair. Might be that. Anyway, go if you find a picture.
I'm not rising to it.
If you click on it, that should be absolutely all you need. Paul on this. Watching The Good Doctor chatting with Lara Croft the other night, I noticed something rather odd about the clip from Changeling. 3 mocked-up Los Angeles mastheads. Los Angeles Times mastheads were shown. One had a headline with the word clues
spelled
C-L-E-W,
wrong, yeah.
While another had kidnapping spelled with one P. I know that movies rarely manage to mock up newspapers convincingly, wrong typeface, unconvincing layout and so on, but you would think that Clint might have noticed the blunder whilst poring over the final cut in the editing suite, or maybe he needs some specs after all those years squinting into the sun.
I can't remember whether those are clips from the movies or whether those were clips done for that piece. I can't remember. I'm not going to blame Clint for it, because I can't remember where those came from, because they were in the edit, obviously.
What's coming next, Good Doctor?
It's 4 Christmases. It's Christmas. Where's Vince Vaughn?
Something. Who cares? Under a very large snowball? No.
We can only hope.
He's made another movie. Details in just a moment. And Martin writes, dear Emily and Bagpuss, a strange day in Portsmouth. The faint aroma of frustration hangs in the ether. But there would seem to be something else afoot. All is not right. The dogs sniff the air and paw at doors. Urchins cower in the archways and refuse their blue pop. Fishermen report the catching of strange bug-eyed creatures of the deep, which snap and froth, and the fishermen feel omens. Omens perhaps of forthcoming darkness. Will he who shall not be named, the Dark Angel himself, rise to once more stalk the land and call his faithful to him?
Our Where's ancient... this going?
Just bear with it.
Okay.
Page 1. Our ancient, nameless, Lovecraftian horrors to rise from their sleep of ages and crawl forth from the bowels of the earth to wreak horror upon us. Does an unseen asteroid speed towards us, promising death and destruction to all? No. is worse than all of these. A new Reese Witherspoon Vince Vaughn film is out, which in itself is pretty grim, but it isn't so much the film, but the collateral damage we fear. We know what this means. Mount Kermode is about to blow. Take shelter, duck and cover. Check your home insurance and building cover. Yours as ever, Martin. Is there a new Vince Vaughn?
There is, and you know, I'm not going to get that exercised about it, because it's almost... Look, last year, remember, Christmas
Please
is coming.
Disappoint.
Fred Claus, remember that?
Dreadful.
Yeah, really was, wasn't
but
it?
Not as bad as the...
Okay, so now...
Not as bad as the Jack Frost thing, remember that?
Snow Dad's better than No Dad. That's just my favourite tagline. That's up there with, he knows if you've been bad or good and he's got a chainsaw.
That's very good.
So now, Christmas has come around again. So Vince Vaughn, you know, he's obviously not busy. And the USP, unique selling point this time, is Reese Witherspoon. Reese Witherspoon, who appears to be following the Halle Berry mode of win an Oscar and then torch career, right? Because Halle Berry, after that Oscar for Monsters Ball, wasn't it, then made Catwoman and Gothica and things went a little bit pear-shaped. And, you know, in the case of Reese Witherspoon, since she did win for Waterline, didn't she? She did win. I'm sure she won. We've had since then...
You looked at me there, film critic.
Yes, I know. I'm pretty sure she did.
I seem to remember from the Angelina Jolie research... Don't look at the clock like that, as though I've just...
No, I wasn't looking at the clock. Sorry, I was...
Is that she, Reese Witherspoon, is the most expensive actress, if you want, in a movie.
Really?
She gets the most per movie than any other actress.
Because Angelina Jolie is up there in the 20 million, isn't it? I think there's only five actresses.
Reese is number one.
Is she?
Carry on.
Okay, well, that's about to come plummeting down around her ears. She made Just Like Heaven, she made Penelope, there was something else really, really terrible recently. Oh, she was in Rendition, which, of course, didn't do any business at all. But now, you can just see the Hollywood executives. This is what's evil, right? This is what's actually evil about this. There's a hideous thing with Hollywood movies, and a classic example of it is Jingle All the Way, a crassly commercially exploitative movie about the crass commercial exploitation of Christmas. You know, Arnold running around, I've got to get a turbo man, oh, Christmas is so, it's so crassly commercial and exploitative, let's make a film about it in that way. He's got a bit Swedish there, obviously, okay? So this is a film in which there's Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn. They play this couple who always go away at Christmas to be away from their horrible family, right? Because family, horrible family, let's get away. And so they pretend, they say that they're going on humanitarian missions to do stuff, you know, with starving children, right? But they're not. They're going on holidays to go scuba diving. But this year, they get snowed in and plot cronk ahoy. Whilst waiting in the airport, they get seen by the local TV crew. And every one of their relatives is watching the television. Cronk! So, for the remainder of the movie, they have to go see all four relatives and spend four Christmases with their respective...
Hence the title.
Four Christmases. See what they did there?
Yes.
Should we have a clip?
No.
I feel we have
all
to.
Right, then.
Go on.
Brad. Baby. I don't want to fight.
Honey, I don't want to fight either. We never fight, honey. I'm sorry.
I love you. Mm-hmm. This is what our families do. You know that. This is what happens. Amanda makes me crazy every time I talk to her.
You're absolutely right. Here's all we got to do is we just got to get through these four Christmases as quickly and as painlessly as possible.
Exactly. Promise me that no matter what happens today, we'll still have each other, right?
Honey, of course we will.
Key phrase there, we've got to get through these four Christmases as quickly and painfully as possible, painlessly as possible. We're all going, yep, I know. There are some movies, it's very dangerous putting a number in the title of a movie, okay? A brilliant example of doing it right is Richard Curtis's Four Weddings and a Funeral, right? Because it's great. You know there's four weddings and a funeral, but you love all of them and you don't want them to be over. And also you think that the wedding that turns out to be, you think it's the other way around.
Even if it was supposed to be called Toffs on Heat.
Toffs on Heat, which is a better title. Yeah, Four Weddings and a Funeral, a brilliant title. However, Four Christmases is one of those movies in which you just find yourself, which one are we on? Two? Has he done two? He's got another two to go. Blimey. Really,
it's difficult to count a four, can it?
No, but it's not this. Well, it is, because what's happening is that your brain looks at the screen through your eyes and goes, nothing happening there. Wake me up in a minute, okay? And you have to, you literally, everything starts to shut down. You know, if you get buried in snow, right?
No.
Yeah, you know what snow is. Snow dad's better than no dad. If you get buried in snow, you start to shut down from the outside in.
Right?
I think it's called, you know, hypothermia or something, right? But watching Four Christmases is kind of a similar experience because you sit down and what happens is everything starts, everything just goes, nothing's happening. It's like we're in Alien, we're going to be travelling for 5 years now. I might as well go into, you know, hypersleep or whatever it is. So everything starts to shut down.
Put an interesting pair of pants on and just lie under
a sleeping
bag.
That's right, you know, so your fingers stop and your feet stop and everything starts to stop and you go, and you're looking at the screen, you're going, what's he done? He's gone to see Robert Duvall, he's gone to see Sissy Spacek, he's gone to see John Voight, and everything just stopped because, you know, laugh are not ahoy. But worse than that, you know that what's happened with the actors who are, you know, fairly talented. Sissy Spacek's a good performer. Obviously, I thought that Reese Witherspoon was absolutely brilliant and Walk the Line. What they've done is this. They've gone, you know, there's a credit crunch coming and Christmas is going to be really expensive. Because all these Christmas movies are all shot in June. That's how you do it. That's the word. The most cynical thing about them is they're made in the summer. You know, it's going to be expensive Christmas, so we'd better do a Christmas movie, yeah? Because I hear there's a credit crash coming. I mean, the bottom's falling out of the property market. So we'll do it. No, it's terrible, obviously. It's not fun. And nothing, but it doesn't matter. Is Sissy around? Yes, she's okay. Is John Voight around? He'd be fine.
That whole camp thing, very strong.
Vince is there, you know.
Very strong.
And this is, so what you're effectively watching is somebody's investment portfolio. That's it. You're watching their Christmas bonus box. You're just what, and literally the looks that they have on their faces as they're doing this thing is, where are we? 15 million, whatever it is. That's all it is. So it's like watching people earning money to pay for their Christmas. Now, that's your idea of fun. Terrific. Last time I paid to see that in the cinema was, you know, it was Fred Claus. Because you know that Vince Vaughn's not that much of an idiot. I mean, really, nobody's that. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. He made Dodgeball. He made Swingers. And, of course, there are moments in this film in which he's together on screen with Jon Favreau. And you're looking at Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn, you think, I tell you, if you were sitting in that lounge in Swingers and I said, guys, you know what you're going to be doing in 15 years' time? Look at Four Christmases. I tell you, they would have taken themselves out into the street right away and dealt with that problem.
Well,
it just crushing. But worst of all, the thing about, remember I said Sex and the City is a film that spends its entire running time ramming handbags down your throat and then has the gall to say, you know what, there's more to life than handbags. And in the case of Four Christmases, it's a movie that spends its entire time going, you know, family horrible, family horrible, family horrible, family horrible, and then goes, you know what? We all love family.
Because
John Voight, right, who's crawled out of some sewer somewhere, you know.
And imagine John Voight waiting to welcome you back.
He comes in and he goes,
hi, Angelina.
Hi. Yeah, no, don't. And he goes, you know, because the thing is, there's nothing more important than family. Now, normally, okay, just brain at this point, my brain would have just gone, bing, tear response, boom, crash. But in this case, my brain went, nope. Sorry, nothing at all. Because usually you evoke family and I will have a little bit of an emotional response. But in this case, seriously, Ernest from, you know, Christmas Lake could have run around with a chainsaw. It wouldn't have made any difference at all. It's stinky and horrible and it is just a savings plan. And I'm really glad that they've got all that money in the bank while everyone else is, you know, watching the bottom drop out of the market. But it's like watching the news about the stock market crashing. It's that exciting.
This Christmas, just say no to Vince Vaughn.
In a world of Christmases, he was Easter.
No, that makes him the redemption.
Chocolate, no, the chocolate bunny.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and he is a chocolate bunny. I tell you, I can want to say anything about anybody's weight, but Vince Vaughn does look like somebody who's eaten himself.
Dear Carrie and Grace, every Friday afternoon, this is because we're the competition, the most relaxed listener, due to Steve, who's in the bath with a glass of wine. Dear Carrie and Grace, every Friday I retire to bed with the Labrador and his black sheepskin rug next to me to drink Banania. French listeners will know it. And listen to you both. I think that's even more relaxed than being in the bath. And I just checked it because, you know, you have to. Banania is, as you know, a popular chocolate drink found in France. It's made from cocoa, banana flour, cereals, honey and sugar. There are two types available. Traditional, which must be cooked with milk for 10 minutes, and instant.
Lorks.
And if that is your own, and while lying next to a Labrador on a black sheepskin rug, if you think, Faye and Monty, that that's an exciting afternoon while listening to the radio.
I've got a Labrador, and lying next to the Labrador is not relaxing in the slightest.
And it might be too late for this, but Graham in Derby just twists it, says, Dear Dave Bowman and Hal 9000.
Hey, very good. Where from?
Come on. Space.
No, from where space?
Oh, thing.
space.
My pitch for least relaxed listener, spreading cow manure in thick fog. Now, is there anyone who can be less relaxed than that? Because if you don't know where you're spreading it, That's going to be quite strange, isn't it? So, but you've only got 10 minutes on that. And Catherine in Wiltshire, dear Spacey and Damon, so cool because I just realised you're both quite handsome. And normally I don't read these out because, of course, there are hundreds. Don't laugh, Duncalf.
Sorry.
I'm watching live for the first time ever, and I love the way that you're both trying to look busy during the news. But not quite sure about the suit and tie. Well, that'll be Kermode.
This is what I wear. Sorry. You know, Britain, as the man who's giving middle-aged, miserablest film critics everywhere a bad name, is what I wear.
Having threatened to sue Jason Isaacs, did we say hello to him properly?
Hello to Jason Isaacs. Hello, Jason. We didn't threaten to sue him.
Hello, David.
You made some disparaging comments about him.
I think he started it. Hello to Dave Morrissey and Stephen Fry. David Bowie, all members of Fairport Convention. Actually, having had Rick Wakeman on the programme this week, I'd like to start saying hello to all members of the Straubs.
Okay.
And yes.
Okay.
What do you think? Is that okay?
Well, the next thing you'll be on to all members of Buggles, and I think that's a thin end of the wedge,
well,
isn't
I'm
it?
Not sure. I'm just happy. Let's include the Straubs and yes.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Well, I think you're throwing the net wider than. I mean, I'm not having Electric Light Orchestra. I love them, but they didn't happen in the week that I was here.
Damien in Shipley, dear with Nail and him, going off the Good Doctor's rant about good foreign films being remade in the English language. I was wondering what his thoughts were on the news of Spielberg and Will Smith's plans to remake Old Boy. I would pay good money to see Will Smith eat a live octopus, but something tells me this won't be quite what we get at the end of the day.
Yeah,
that's a good idea for a film.
Funnily enough, the live, I think it is an octopus, isn't it? Because that's where the whole octopody thing came from. That scene I just thought was completely unnecessary. Anyway, I like that film, but that scene was unnecessary. And your man apologised to the octopody apparently before eating them. As if that's better.
All right, then.
Yeah, because he's a Buddhist or something. Can we rattle through a couple of things? Because I want to do it, because there's other things that we need to cover.
Have you got something else to do?
Yeah. No. It's just that I've got 7 minutes and there are three movies. I'm going to mention The Silence of Lorna, because I don't want this to get overlooked, right? Okay, because it is really good. The Silence of Lorna, which is a new movie from the Dardenne brothers, who made The Child, you know, L'Enfant, The Child, and that was their second Palme d'Or win. And they're great European filmmakers, and they've got this very kind of realist tradition, and critics have generally loved them. Now, when Silence of Lorna played at Cannes, it did win an award. I think it won Best Screenplay, but it was kind of rather badly received, I think, because everybody had expected after L'Enfant that they would do another Palme d'Or winner, and it obviously didn't win the Palme d'Or. The story is, the central character, Lorna, is an Albanian woman in Belgium who's attempting to get a passport by being married to a junkie. It's kind of a scam. The deal is that she will then become Belgian. She will then divorce him. He will get paid. She will then go and marry somebody else. But of course, actually, what's happening is that the people behind all the scam don't want the junkie to get the money. What they want is for him to take an overdose and die. And the silence of the title is her involvement in, or lack of involvement in, or going along with this scheme. Now, very quickly, two things I want to say is, firstly, I think the Dardennes are terrific filmmakers, and I'm not alone in thinking that. The two criticisms that have been raised about the film is, one of them is that the plot isn't anything like as tight as something like The Child, and it has ellipses in it, which I think are perfectly justifiable. I have no problem with whatsoever. I found it very moving. It is very much a film about the problem of evil and one's involvement with, or barrier from evil. And the second thing is, people have said that they can't get a handle on the ending. And without giving away the ending, here's what I want to say. The ending made complete sense to me, because as far as I was concerned, the whole thing played like a fable. And it ends up being, I think, a grim fairy tale, grim double M. And I think if you enjoyed The Child and you're open-minded and you are, as I am, interested in, you know, the kind of metaphysical good and evil issues, then I think you'll find an awful lot in the Dardenne's new movie. The problem is just to think of them as just realist directors, because they're not. OK, fine, lecture out of the way. Also out this week, What Just Happened, which is basically The Player Light, and it's based on a memoir by Art Linson, who was a Hollywood producer, was still a Hollywood producer. And the theory, basically, the plot is Robert De Niro is a Hollywood producer who's making a movie, and he's made the movie, and everyone hates it. Everyone hates it, basically being the test audience, the studio head who's going to have to push it, and they've gone to a test screening and everything's gone badly wrong. Here's a clip.
Where's your director?
Missed his plane at Heathrow. He's sick about it. He'll be in tomorrow morning.
It's hard to produce a good movie, Ben.
Very.
Sean, just brilliant. Brilliant work.
Hey, man.
You're never not great, you're just great.
Think we got a shot?
Absolutely. Jeez. No. Yeah.
See you later.
Okay, I'll see you in Cannes.
Yeah, did you work out the G5?
Yes.
I got a smoke on the plane.
You're gonna lose money.
How do you know?
A lot of money.
You know this before it's done?
That's right.
Even before the DVD comes out?
Pretty much.
So Sean Penn self-deprecatingly playing Sean Penn there as the guy complaining, I need the G5 because I've got a smoke. So
did he play it quite well?
Well, he did Sean Penn, didn't he?
Yeah.
But were you asking that ironically? Because there are people who play themselves very badly.
Yeah, well, you've already mentioned Mr. Voight, who made a very bad job of playing Angelina Jolie's dad
in the Tomb Raider movies.
How tough can that be?
It's great, isn't it? And also Bruce Willis playing Bruce Willis as an actor who's got this beard that they want him to get rid of, and he's being completely cantankerous. He won't get rid of the beard, which is based on a real life story which apparently involved one of the Baldwins. I haven't read the book, but apparently it did, and blah, 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 blah. But now, here's the thing. On the one hand, you can look at it and go, Robert De Niro, who's a good friend of Art Linson's, Sean Penn playing himself, Bruce Willis playing himself. Obviously, it's an inside film. It's got that inside a feel to it. However, the presence of Bruce Willis actually makes you think it's Player 2, and it's also Player Light, because, of course, remember, Bruce Willis did that thing in the end of the Player, when he goes and rescues Julia Roberts and does the whole thing about the happy ending for the film that Richard E. Grant pitches very, very early on, with no stars, no happy ending, no giving. Remember all that stuff? Fine. So,
yes.
The problem with... what? Thank you.
Was the bit that I was meant to put in at the
thank you.
Moment.
The problem with the film
to
is...
to the extent that I'm involved.
That there is some stuff in it that's sort of interesting Hollywood insider stuff, but we have seen it all before. The whole thing about test screening audiences always wanting happy endings is very, very old hat. There's a long story in it about a dog gets shot in the end of the film, and they all say, you can't do that, you can't shoot the dog, you can't shoot the dog, you can't shoot the dog, you've got to change it to give it a different ending because you can't shoot the dog. Years and years ago, 10, 12, 15 years ago, I interviewed Danny DeVito, who'd made War of the Roses. And there's this whole thing in War of the Roses. There's a scene in War of the Roses in which Kathleen Turner clearly kills the dog and feeds it to Michael Douglas, right?
Yep.
But then, of course, the previous audiences went, no! So then they inserted a shot of the dog still alive. So it was a scam. She didn't really do it, because they said, you can do anything else, but you cannot touch pets, right? The audiences will lose. So... that kind of idea was around and was very current. I mean, this was broke, you know, this was in the public consciousness 15 years ago. So it seems terribly old hat to make a movie now that says, you know what, you can't make a film with an ending in which you shoot the dog because the public won't. Because it's like, yeah, we all know that. We all saw The Player. We all saw War of the Roses. We all went through that. Plus, it's a film which ends up in Cannes, in which the presence of the dog ending causes the Cannes audience to boo. You know, have you ever been to Cannes? They love that rubbish. I mean, I have been seen so many films in Cannes which are just complete rubbish but have something grim in them, and everyone, oh, bravo, so brave, yes, marvellous. It's like with The Idiots when it suddenly, there's that ridiculous bit when it sort of descends into hardcore, and we're, oh, yes, bravo, marvellous. I mean, sit there, fools. You know, Cannes is the one place that gag doesn't work.
Are you playing to the camera there?
No, I'm playing to you.
Oh, I appreciated it very much.
And so, very finally, can I very briefly mention Flawless, which is this...
How long will it take?
I'm going to do it quickly.
Go on.
It's this sort of old-fashioned thrill directed by Michael Radford. He's had an odd career. He did 1984 and he did Il Postino, and he's done some funny little things. And it's really, really old-fashioned. And Demi Moore plays an American-born Englishwoman, which means basically she couldn't do the accent, as far as I can tell. They'll just say she's American-born, it'll be fine. And she's the person in the company. It's 1960. He's working for a diamond company. She's about to lose her job. Michael Caine. Is the janitor who's been there for ages and ages, and he's got a scam as to how to rip off the diamond company. You know, she had a motive, he had a scheme, together it was murder, blah 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 blah. Not murder, but that's just that okay, the film's all over the place, and it's very creaky and it's very old-fashioned. It doesn't make any sense, and it kind of... But the one thing that makes it worthwhile is Michael Caine, because nobody does a vine killer like Michael Caine. And I was watching it thinking, this really... I mean, it's good-hearted. If you were watching it on a Wednesday afternoon, you know, wet Wednesday with a cup of tea, you think you're watching a film not only is set in the 1960s, but was actually made in the 1960s. But it's all worthwhile for the fact that Michael Caine does that. And when he's explaining his scheme, he goes, "Have you ever known? I've got a thing. I can't bring him in." You can do anything. You can read anything at all, like absolutely anything at all. Right? Credits for the changing. Right? Box office video rentals, company credits, release info, news article. That's where he... And it's, and you go, you know what, Michael? Adopt me as your nephew. You are that...
Why would you
avuncular.
Want to be...
You look in the dictionary under avuncular, it says, see Michael Caine in Flawless.
What would you say, on balance, would be our movie of the week?
I love Changeling and I loved Silence of Lorna, so they are joint film of the week.
But Changeling for normal people, Silence of Lorna for...
That's what Jason Isaacs meant. From your own mouth, are you condemned?
No, well, guilty as charged, but then I don't mind.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.